Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Pluto TV is the new leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 TV channels, thousands of movies on demand, all for free. There's no credit card needed, no sign-up required. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Pluto TV is free on all your favorite devices. Download Pluto TV today.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
All right, we're back and ready to go because we were somewhat hopeful that in the period of time where I took a little vacation with the family, there would be some sense knocked into the Democrats. And I say knocked into, I don't mean violently, I mean intellectually. That they would see that they're on this quixotic mission to take down Trump by cheering against America. That just is never going to work. An optimistic campaign, while one that still differentiates itself from Trump's agenda and Trump's message, would, I think, be competitive. A campaign that essentially not only calls Trump a racist, but by extension calls all the American voters and supporters who voted for him racist. That I don't think works. And on top of that, you add in the rooting against the economy element of all of this. And I think you have like a, you have a real poisonous brew of pessimism. And gosh, I keep saying to myself, it's an odd place to be if you're a Democrat and you essentially are an unhappy person, which a lot of the activists are. They're just unhappy people. And they're even more unhappy when you're happy. Like they can't have you happy. So they don't want you to think that, gosh, given everything our country's been through, race relations are actually pretty good compared to what they were decades ago. And even in the end of the Obama administration, we keep sharing that CNN poll with you that showed how race relations had gotten worse under Obama. But all things considered, our country is really in a great position vis-a-vis the rest of the world. I mean, Germany's in recession. The UK is still grappling with Brexit. France is still dealing with its yellow vest movement. China is in a much bigger slowdown than certainly any other country because of its reliance on trade with the United States. You see the global economy slowing, and in part that does affect us. But overall, we are the envy of the world. If you want to work, you can get a job in America today. If you want to work in one of the new manufacturing positions that's coming into the United States, then, you know, we can't make you go to work, but you can actually get a job. If you want to work, you will be able to get a job in the United States. That's just awesome. So you should be happy that we are living in a country such as this at a time like this with a president like this who's not perfect. Nobody is, but he is leading the country more pragmatically than any president in recent memory. And I say he's looking at the world as it is, not the way a lot of the people on the left want to believe it is, but the way it actually is. And it's not going to be straight conservative on some issues. It's going to be more populist. He wants to make deals. He's a deal maker. He does want to do deals because he thinks that ultimately is better for America if we can do a good deal rather than not. But he's not going to sign on to a bad deal either. So it's a good time. It's a time to be happy. Make plans with your family. Put some money away for a rainy day. A lot of people complain about debt. I get that. Debt's awful. I had debt after school. But tell me a time in our country's history where people haven't had debt. This is not a new phenomenon that people have debt. But, you know, Trump's not going to tell you that he's going to wave a magic wand and your debt's going to go away because he knows ultimately that's just a lie. It ultimately will come crashing down on all of us. So he's not going to tell you that. So I think he's thinking about this over the last couple of weeks. He really is far more prudent and pragmatic, both about geopolitical matters and about the economy, than certainly the Bushes were. I mean, think about what they told us. They told us that China, opening up China was going to be good for the American middle class. Ha! They told us that if we went into Iraq, would be greeted as liberators. They told us that spreading democracy was going to be good for the people of our country, and that it would be, you know, fairly over time easy to do. Well, it turned out to be false. And Iraq turned out to be a complete disaster. And we ended up screwing that whole situation up. They told us a lot of things that weren't true. That all these new immigrants were instinctively conservative. So we shouldn't worry about bringing in either letting in a lot of illegal immigrants or, you know, still keeping the same level of legal immigration, because these people were conservatives at heart. Really? Look at Texas. Texas is still as conservative as it was 20 years ago. How about California? Is California as conservative as it was 20 years ago? No and no. Overwhelmingly, immigration has led to more Democrat voters in the United States, period. It's just a fact. Same thing with Northern Virginia. Same thing with the state of Georgia. Same thing with the state of Florida. The difference in most cases, I think, when you look at this, again, without a political lens, without looking through a political lens, you know, more new immigrants are Democrat than not. Okay. Maybe Republicans just need to do a better job of convincing them, but you can't say it hasn't had a massive electoral, you know, influence on the United States. It has. So Trump's just trying to look at everything pragmatically. And the Democrats, meanwhile, don't want you to be happy. That's where I am today. They do not want American citizens to live fulfilled lives outside of government interference and government control and government mandates. They want to be in the driver's seat. You get in the back seat. That's it. I want to thank all of our sponsors, by the way, for today's podcast: ADT Home Security, GenuCell, Home Title Lock, and Pluto TV. They, among others, help provide this podcast free to you every week.
I don't see a recession. I mean, the world is in a recession right now. And although that's too big a statement, but if you look at China, China's doing very, very poorly. I just saw a report, they've had the worst year they've had in 27 years because of what I've done. And they want to come to the negotiating table. You know, the companies are leaving and they're laying off millions of people because they don't want to pay 25%. And that's why they want to come to the table. I don't think there's another reason other than President Xi, I'm sure, likes me very much. But they're losing millions and millions of jobs in China. And we're not paying for the tariffs. China is paying for the tariffs for the 100th time.
Well, we have to, again, reset the conversation here. Trump is right. We are doing so much better than any nation on earth. Why? Because we're focused on our people first and redoing bad trade deals and disentangling the American people from these burdensome regulations. That's why we're doing better. Corporate tax cut helped somewhat. A lot of people are paying more in taxes after that cut, you know, with the state tax deduction eliminated. But, you know, for a lot of people, they did have some more money in their pockets. That's a good thing. Wages are going up. Democrats used to say, well, if wages go up, that's a sign that things are actually doing better in the United States. Now that wages are going up, they kind of throw that off. They say, oh, no, that doesn't mean anything. Oh, yes, it does. To real people, it means real positive growth in their own families' lives. Joining us now, Pat Buchanan, who's been warning about a lot of these trends for some time. He joins us now. Pat, how are you?
Doing fine, Laura.
Do you agree with my conclusion that Democrats are miserable the happier Americans are without big government?
Well, Democrats are miserable the happier Donald Trump is, that's for sure.
But they have to convince people, Pat, that things aren't really good in the United States.
They do seem to be, and of course I'm talking about the folks on television, you see, who are the voices and the front persons for liberalism today, seem to be a very unhappy group, and they're apprehensive also, because there's a fear, despite the polls showing Donald Trump pretty much underwater in the presidential election, they fear, I think, that the candidates they've got up there, that once they're vetted and once they're put out front and once the attack ads begin, can't really beat Trump with the American people. So I think they're fretting and they're apprehensive.
Yeah, and I think that, again, considering where the developed world's economy is, and I just went through France and Of course, Germany, which was once the powerhouse of Europe, and now is sputtering along, basically at zero growth and in recession.
What you've got is you've got the number two economy in the world, China, which is going through very rough times. And the president is right. There's disinvestment going on. People who've got factories in China, the cost of production has risen. It's not as competitive as it used to be. And they're looking at American tariffs to get their products into the United States. So companies are slowly saying, look, China's not what it was. The other new countries, Vietnam or Mexico or Indonesia, maybe we ought to move our factory out of here and move it down there. So we won't ever have to face the problem of American tariffs and Chinese and American troubles. So I think China's got a problem that's number two. As you mentioned, Germany's the number four economy in the world, and it's not doing well. The Brits are going to have a real problem with the breakout from Brexit. It doesn't look like real growth there. They're one of the top 10. So you've got problems around the world, but you're also right in this. That if you look at the world, the United States is doing better than any of them, and the United States is doing well with unemployment where it is, I mean, below 4%, and among minorities and among women. And these folks, it's lower than it's ever been in history. So you got a lot of good things going for Americans, and there's a lot of preaching of gloom and doom. The end is near, and the sandwich boards are out, and Times Square, and wish his father to the fourth here. Liberals are making novenas for a recession.
Oh, if only they were saying they're novenas, I'd be happy. Pat, remember, they're against thoughts and prayers, okay? They don't want... The only prayers they're doing now are praying that we get a recession, okay? So that's their prayers. They're praying, please bring us a recession. And I think that ultimately does reveal a lot, though, about where they are as a party, that they are rooting against the American economic revival.
Well, the only thing they got two problems they face. One is the one hope they got is that if the economy goes down and people say we need a change. But secondly, the thing they got to worry about is the identity of the nominee. Now, I see in the poll today that Joe Biden's way back up on front in the CNN poll. And, you know, Kamala Harris has fallen back to 5%.
I knew that.
Bernie and Sister Warren were 14 or 15%. But at the same time, anybody that's seen Joe Biden in those two debates and who's Democrat and who's a serious looker at politics has got to really feel annoying concern that Joe just doesn't have it anymore. And if that's true, this is going to be revealed at the election, I mean, at the debates in September and beyond. And, you know, Laura, this nomination is going to be over.
Click.
I think February is going to decide this thing. Mm-hmm. Do you notice that the New Hampshire primary, the Iowa caucuses first, New Hampshire primary, then you got Nevada, and then you got South Carolina. All of them occur in the month of February. Mm-hmm. And on March 3rd, I think there's 14 states. I mean, it's going to be all these 24 folks. Mm. They're going to look like Custer's command after February.
Pat, I've got to say, I actually think Jill Biden is running for president. I mean, I think she's the one who's actually really running, because every time you see poor old Joe interviewed, you know, she has to jump in and kind of save the day, or then afterward explain what he really meant.
You know, your candidate might be better on, I don't know, health care than Joe is. But you've got to look at who's going to win this election. And maybe you have to swallow a little bit and say, okay, I sort of personally like so-and-so better. But your bottom line has to be that we have to beat Trump.
It kind of reminds me of Pope Francis. They're always saying, oh, no, that's just the translation. He didn't really mean that. That's what they always say. Every time Pope Francis says something on the verge of, you know, a lot of conservatives, Catholics think is heresy, they'll say, oh, no, that was just the bad translation. So that's what Jill Biden does. She said, oh, no, I know you might not think he has it all together, but he really does, and he's the best for the country. It's a very odd Yeah. Odd dynamic with Biden.
I mean, if I were, and I don't dislike Joe Biden at all.
No, I don't either.
And he's he's sort of a likable guy. And if you've got an opposition, you got to have an opposition. Joe Biden has never been a problem in that sense. And frankly, I thought his crime bill in 1994 was a lot better than he thought. And as for his decisions opposing busing, he should have been in the White House helping me.
Oh, my God.
I don't know why he's, of course, he's got to, because of the nature of the new Democratic Party, apologize for a lot of things that were, that crime bill in the mid-90s did an awful lot to dramatically reduce violent crime in America. It increased the incarceration levels. But a lot of folks locked up were responsible for an enormous amount of crime. But I think the problem is, if I were one of Biden's folks, I would really be nervous, of how he's going to perform in these coming debates, because that could really be telling. And I don't know what happens if folks sort of conclude, as they did, for example, with Robert Mueller, who obviously was a very sharp guy, head of the FBI. And I sat down in front of that TV when Mueller started to speak, and I was expecting a real good exchange with some of these Republicans who are both aggressive and intelligent and well-informed. And at times I felt sorry for Mueller. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're going to find out here in the fall whether these early indications were simply footfalls and gaffes like Joe used to make, or whether there's a more serious matter here.
Well, what's I think very telling about where the Democrats are right now is their inability to explain not just the strength of the U.S. economy and their pathetic attempts to dismiss it or root for recession, but their approach to China, or what they say they'd do vis-a-vis China. And Pete Buttigieg, who, my gosh, they have done everything in their power to prop up Pete Buttigieg, who can't even run South Bend, Indiana, let alone run the country. But this is what he said with Jake Tapper. Let's listen.
What makes you think China would make a trade deal with you as president without the kind of pressure that President Trump is now exerting with these tariffs?
Well, we have a lot of different forms of leverage in the relationship, but it's also a fool's errand to think you're going to be able to get China to change the fundamentals of their economic model by poking them in the eye with some tariffs. There is clearly no strategy for dealing with the trade war in a way that will actually lead to results. Part of the reason is that this is not what it's going to take to actually guide China into a different direction. This is about a lot more than just some tariffs.
Okay, well, Rhodes Scholar notwithstanding, scholarship notwithstanding, Pat, if it was so easy to exercise leverage against China without tariffs, then one would think that over the last, the 8 years of Obama, we would have seen that happen.
So, well, no, quite frankly, that both parties, and especially the Republicans in the 90s and after we brought China into the WTO in 2001, I gave them every advantage in the world, and they came in and they carted off American industry, hauled it away the way the Russians did in Germany after World War II, just put it on the railroad cars and took all the industry and moved it to China. But I do agree with Buttigieg on this particular point. Fundamental change in the structure of the Chinese economy and what they're doing, like subsidizing their industries and stealing intellectual property and shaking down American businesses and shoving out the fentanyl and a lot of things that they're doing. They're doing because they're a communist society and communist system, and as Reagan said, they reserve to themselves the right to lie, cheat, and steal. And we're not going to succeed in altering their fundamental character in a trade deal. And this is really something we're going to have to debate. What we can get is some kind of trade deal which makes reduces our trade deficits and the rest of it gradually, and to the point where they're not growing every single year. But in the long run, I think the Chinese system is going to need something like what happened to the Soviet system.
I was just
going
to say that. This is where Pat and I have been friends for so many years. You and I have the same train of thought on this. But my view on China, and it has been for some time, 20 years, is that we shouldn't be trading at all with China. I mean, I think Trump's a moderate on China trade, Pat. I would disengage with China, slowly disengage. I would treat China the way we treated the Soviet Union. Companies are already moving out of China. Every trade deficit dollar that we have with China goes to buy more weapons.
Well, let me with you in this sense. I do think China is it's an endemic danger. I think it is a great power which sees the United States as a fading power.
Yep.
I don't think it wants war. It basically wants to win control of Asia and Africa and Europe and become the first hegemonic power on Earth at the expense of the United States without some kind of crazy war, which is what the British and Germans of the rising and receding powers in the first half of the last century didn't avoid. So, but I do think that you're basically correct. The United States policy, I mean, it should be to be dependent on nothing of vital interest or vital concern, to be dependent on the Chinese for it. I mean, we should become a self-reliant republic again. We've got a great country, 335 million people or so, and we should not depend on China, especially for the necessities of our national life, and we should gradually decouple from China. But I will say this, you can't do that radically given all the supply networks and things that have developed over the years. And if you just, put 100% tariff on Chinese goods and American businesses there started collapsing left and right, you would have a major recession in the United States as well as in China and worldwide. So you've got to do this, quam celeriter, as we used to say in Latin, as rapidly as possible, but it can't be done instantaneously.
Well, and Pat, I think that, again, President Trump sees how this is going. He sees the direction this is going in, and he doesn't want to do anything precipitous. So when he says President Xi is a good man and he's working hard for his people, Trump's saying this because he, if it comes to down to the China-U.S. trade relationship disrupting a chance for Trump to be reelected. Trump doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to tank the economy before the election.
Exactly.
But that's smart, number one. Number two, he knows that, look, it's either going to be the U.S. or China in the 21st century. That's it. There's no other country that's going to rise to the top. Now, people could write off the United States, say we're never coming back, we're weak, we're too fat, we're too fat and happy or fat and lazy, whatever people want to say, but I'm not betting against the United States. Trump is very, I think, clear-eyed about that. He sees how big and how dangerous China has become, and he doesn't want war. But he doesn't want us to keep going down the same path we've been on before, which was a loser. I don't care what Buttigieg says. Yeah. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
I think what he's looking to, is my guess, is sort of a reciprocal trade agreement where the United States is better off than we were before he started with the tariffs and going in as an interim measure. But I agree with you. Anyone who looks at China in the long run should say, look, this is not just a trading partner with whom we're having problems, or it's sort of been disobeying the rules like some NFL team. This is a serious long-term threat to the United States, and we ought to begin to have a long-term strategy to deal with it. And I agree with you. Decoupling of vital interests, of our vital concerns from reliance upon China is an imperative.
We're talking to Pat Buchanan here on the Laura Ingraham podcast. Trump inherited an economy from Obama's that the Washington Post today in a big piece and others on television say was a strong economy. This was Obama's, good economy that was then wrecked by Trump.
What we are seeing is that the proverbial chickens are coming home to roost. Donald Trump inherited a great economy from Barack Obama, one that was steadily growing. And everybody remembers the doldrums, the pits that Barack Obama lifted the economy up from. But now you have a tax scam for the top 1%. You have tariffs, which are bad for our farmers, bad for our businesses, bad for our manufacturers, bad for our retailers. And so, yes, I mean, what he's done is he's implemented his own policies and he screwed up Barack Obama's good economy. Thank you, Donald Trump.
Do you think that ultimately works, Pat?
No, it doesn't. It was
that's a weak argument.
It was pooping along under Obama, and Trump came in with deregulation and the tax cuts, and the fact that people saw him as basically a friend to business, a friend to investment, a friend to growth, and not a quasi-socialist. It cut loose all the American energy. And look at Negan. You know, you shouldn't bet everything on the market, but look at the stock market when he came in and look at where it is now. And you can see that you had a tremendous spurt when Donald Trump took over as president of the United States. And people know that and understand that. And whenever there are problems they got with the president, I think they don't mean they look at some of those proposals over in the Democratic side, you know. I think that's the, you know, the 401k is going to fall over and drop dead.
Right. I mean, think about, I mean, I, again, we know that what the Democrats are selling doesn't work. I mean, all you just need to do is look at France or look at, you know, look at South American countries who've tried the same thing. It sounds good. Like, okay, I want everything paid for and I want, we're going to get a bunch of free stuff and we're going to tax people really a lot. And
you know,
it's not going to work.
A lot of Democrat, I mean, up in New York, I mean, the city is just all purely Democrats, but many of those folks that they're up there in the markets, they're in business and things. They may be Democrats and like to be at the club and say we contributed to the party and isn't Obama great and everything. But they take a look at what's on the agenda for some of these folks, and they're going to say, look, I'm not liking Donald Trump that much, but we can't go down that road. That's the end of what we've got. And everything is at stake here, you know, and we're going to pay a hellish price if these socialists, one of these socialists gets elected president of the United States. So I think a lot of them are apprehensive. I mean, I would tell you over Warren and obviously over Bernie. I mean, Bernie makes no bones about it. He's a socialist and he's going to change things dramatically if he gets in there. He spent his whole life. There's no doubt about his sincerity. And so, I mean, I think some of those Democrats up there, I mean, obviously Trump wouldn't carry New York, but my guess is he's going to get a lot of hidden money. I mean, I remember I was with Nixon during the McGovern campaign, and as folks found out later during Watergate, all these Humphrey Democrats were giving us money because they said we can't have McGovern.
I just think, again, Trump's approval rating, Pat, is not where it should be, frankly, with this economy. It should be much higher. He deserves some of the blame for that because I think he swings at every pitch, like people like Scaramucci. Like I wouldn't give Scaramucci the time of day. He's such, you know, what is he doing?
Like the heavyweight champion going out and getting in a bar fight or something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, it's like Bryce Harper coming to, you know, T-ball game and like, wow, I got another home run. I don't follow that, but that he's, you know, Trump's 73 years old. He's not going to change. That's who he is. And that's just who he is. So, but nevertheless, he should be higher in approval. And,
sure.
And that concerns me. The suburban women vote, concerns me. He did pretty well, among women last time around, all things considered, but he's got to turn out those evangelical voters. Plus, he has to be ready for the turnout operation the Democrats will have among new immigrants into the United States who are, you know, Bush has told us all those new immigrants, Pat, were going to be these, you know, card-carrying members of the Republican Party. How did that work out in California and Texas?
Texas is fading away.
Yeah, well, how did that work? I just got back from California, and I had a fun time there, and it's a beautiful state, but boy, it's certainly changed a lot over the last 20 years.
Well, politically, I've written many times that, you know, when Texas looks like California politically, it's or looks like it demographically, it's going to start to look like California politically. And that's, I think, is basically the reality. And it's moving that way, although what Texas has going for it is different. It's a sort of a deep religious culture, traditionalist, conservative, evangelical Christian, even among the minorities, that California doesn't have, you know, the West Coast doesn't have. But Texas is clearly moving, and when Texas goes, the country goes.
What do the Republicans do in the meantime? How do they how do they protect Texas, given the fact that, you know, we're seeing some, you know, fairly disturbing trends there? Can they protect it?
Well, I mean, demographically, it's the Hispanics. You mentioned the Hispanics. There's no doubt that socially and culturally, they are more conservative in a lot of ways than the folks who are already here. These are many of these folks. You know, they go to church on Sundays. They got good family values. They raise their kids in good communities and things. But I did see a poll somewhere. They said, "Do you think the government or the private sector is the responsible authority upon which you should rely for your benefits and things like that?" And overwhelmingly, they favor government. There's no tradition there of small government conservatism in the various countries now that are contributing most to the new populations in America. And I think as folks grow up and new citizens are created and people are brought into the polls and all sorts of expansion of the electorate takes place, the expanding electorate is not a Republican electorate primarily.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, again, it's going to require – I think it requires something that's not happening now, at least through politics. Politics is just not where it's happening. There, since the schools aren't educating kids in basic economics, that makes sense. Not really giving a fair view of history. They're certainly not encouraging patriotism. I think it's incumbent upon, you know, this, you know, group of conservatives working for Trump to do that kind of, I mean, it sounds like, maybe it sounds goofy, but kind of primary education. Like, why does immigration matter? And why does it have to be done well in order to help a country?
One of the problems, of course, is that the 60s, the left, the cultural left really went wild, and they were crushed politically by Nixon and Reagan. You know, 49 state landslides, and Reagan had a 44 state landslide, and even Bush got a 40 state landslide. But these folks who have captured the culture, who captured the heights of the culture, have now, you know, created basically by control of educational institutions and education and Hollywood and all the rest of it, they've controlled sort of the formation of a tremendous number of young Americans who are now middle age. And each new generation, I think, tends to be much more to the left than the generations that are passing on. And so it looks to me, you know, there's a certain inevitability there. It's a very difficult thing to turn around. I mean, a culture like as powerful as American culture.
Well, again, it seems that we need to understand how we got here. And it's not a linear trajectory to this place. But even with all the media and the negative coverage and the liberals and universities, I mean, Trump still won in 2016. That's pretty amazing. I mean, really, it's incredible. I mean, you got to think about that.
Someone said of Calvin Coolidge that his career manifested signs of celestial intervention.
Yeah. Well, but you see
really,
what I mean?
It was miraculous.
I mean, can you pull off a miracle
Wisconsin,
again?
Michigan, and Pennsylvania. I think Trump's election rests basically upon two things. One is the economy, and second is the nominee, the identity of the Democratic nominee. And under the identity of the Democratic nominee, does the Republican Party, the conservative movement, have the capacity to show the American people exactly what that would mean, given what those individuals, what stands they've taken, what things they've said, what they promised for America? Is this where you want to go? We know you got problems with Trump, who, if it were Trump versus non-Trump, non-Trump would win, but it's going to be Trump versus somebody else. And so I think they really have to go to work there. And I think Trump is not, and one thing that worries me is some of the polls now that show on the spread pretty far. I would not be worried if Trump is down 4 or 3 points or something like that in an identity contest because of what we know who a Trump is faults and his successes and what he offers. But these folks have to be identified. The portrait of them has to be painted for the American people by the Trump campaign and the conservative movement. And it's extraordinary assets of the conservative movement, let me say, that and the populist conservatives that just didn't exist back in the Nixon days.
Well, and again, the traditional conservative Bush movement, that's over. I mean, Paul Ryan is... News came out today that he's moving his family back to Washington. I'm like, well, Paul Ryan lived in Washington for the past like 28 years. Like, it's not. Why is that? That's like the most.
Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's like the most unsurprising news I've heard. Paul Ryan moved back to Washington. It's like, okay, like what's up there? And he's like, if Trump wins, he'll set up a think tank and make a lot of money. If Trump loses, he's getting ready for 2024 and think it's going to bring back that Jack Kemp magic, Pat.
Oh, I don't think. My guess is Paul Ryan is not thinking of a political career. He's got carried too much weight and baggage, and he's too much a representative of what the Republican Party has moved on from.
I think that's kind of over. I mean, there's no. Although we do have to worry about Bill Kristol and Scaramucci launching a new effort, Pat, to unseat Trump. Doesn't that remind you of what they were trying to do in the? And then the convention, they're going to have a, split convention, and they're going to have that McMuffin run, and they're always like sitting there like, and that's not all. We're going to do. I mean, they're just pathetic.
I think Brother Crystal's had a pretty long losing streak here for a while.
No, that Lamar Alexander campaign, and it's going to turn around any second now. Remember they Lamar for a while. I mean, God bless. Pat Buchanan, it's always great to talk to you, my friend. And
Okay. All right, you take care.
Take
it easy, Laura.
Right, thanks so much. Pat Buchanan here on the Laura Ingraham Podcast. And I want to remind everybody that the Genucel blowout sale is here, and the prices slashed dramatically in August. You're going to receive a $30 instant coupon applied automatically to your web or your phone orders. It's very easy. Just go to Genucel.com. Cheryl from Fort Wayne in Indiana writes, she's stunned. The very first time she tried the jawline treatment, she immediately felt the tightening sensation on her skin. She's been using it now for weeks, and the results are visible. I love hearing this. I love reading these. Keep them coming. Repair that summer sun damage, my friends. You've got to do it, and that means you got to get the best in skincare. I use Genucel, and I wouldn't use it unless I loved it. And when I went to California, I brought it with me. Three different Genucel products all traveled with me in my makeup kit, and I just wouldn't leave home without them, and that's all you need to know from my perspective. But if you're not satisfied, you always get that 100% money-back guarantee. But results, you'll start seeing them really fast. Genucel Immediate Effects is also free with your order, so just go to Genucel.com, that's Genucel.com, and you'll get a $30 instant coupon automatically off your order in August. Genucel.com. They say that home is where the heart is. Well, the reality is that home is where all of your precious belongings are located, where your family lives. So don't you want to protect your most precious investment? So go with the nation's number one smart home security provider, ADT. They provide everything from video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart locks and lights, all controlled from the ADT app or the sound of your voice. So peace of mind, priceless. So get a custom designed ADT home security system connected to first responders installed in your home today. Safety, security and protection are just a click away. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com.
I'm trying to help you up, you crazy bitch.
Ma'am, can I help you?
You guys gotta move.
Get the fucking away from me. I want these fucking bitches.
Hey, hey.
Back up. Back up.
Back up.
Back up. Back up.
That was this weekend in Portland, Oregon. But don't worry, because the mayor of Portland, Mr. Wheeler, said things were generally pretty peaceful. Does that sound peaceful to you?
So what I'm telling the police bureau is no violence, no vandalism. Don't let the shitty city get shut down. Make sure that people have the ability to go about their business.
Joining us now is Harmeet Dhillon, of course, civil rights attorney who's been tracking this. She represents Andy Ngo, who, of course, was violently attacked at the previous Portland Antifa rally, and she joins us now. Harmeet, it's good to talk to you. The coverage of this has basically been, well, there were pockets of violence, but Antifa is just there to take a stand against the fascist people, this Proud Boy movement that just wants to move around in an unfettered way and without ever being challenged. So that's the take that I'm getting from the coverage.
Laura, I would call that propaganda and false from people we've spoken to who were there on the ground. There were probably 10 people on the Antifa side for every one of the Proud Boy people.
So who was doing what to whom first? Do you have any idea or any sense about, you know, how this started? And I know there were various videos that are being posted all over, but I mean, it sounds like I'm talking to my kids, but who started it?
As typical, the Antifa folks started it. I mean, they come to fight. They come with, you know, I've seen some images of chunks of concrete that were brought there to throw at buses. There were, you know, buses that came from out of town with a couple of the Proud Boys groups. And those guys retreated fairly quickly. They left. They, you know, they came to have a march to protest against the violence, and they left. But the violence from the Antifa people continued for hours after that until the evening. And even after the police declared an unlawful assembly, it continued even after that. And so what the mayor is saying is simply false. And of the hundreds of police who were there, they were clearly also told to not step in and break up disturbances or protect people. And you've seen some of the same horrifying videos I have.
Oh, no. This is just a scandal. I mean, it really is. And meanwhile, none of the assailants who attacked your client, Andy Ngo, have been found, even though we have photos of them?
That's correct. We have photos. We have video. We provided the authorities with potential identification. And no arrests have been made. And it's now going into almost 8 weeks later.
Well, so what can be done? I mean, what can you do? What can be done? I mean, this is just lunacy.
I think we're really at the level where the United States Department of Justice needs to get involved here, because there's clearly a lack of equal protection and enforcement of the laws when it comes to people who are perceived as conservative versus the Antifa folks have a lot of sympathizers there in the government. I mean, a couple of days before this event, the mayor had a press conference, or what he called a press conference, which was really just sort of a, you know, kind of cheerleading rally of every left-wing group in the city coming and making statements and condemning white supremacy. And the word Antifa was not uttered during that one-hour event.
Harmeet, I want to move on to another issue, which is what the left is trying to do to set the narrative against Trump supporters. So not only is Donald Trump, in their mind, a racist, a white supremacist, but Donald Trump's supporters are enabling that racism. And in fact, it's not Antifa that's a problem. It's just the white male, period. That's the problem. This was Angela Rye last night on CNN.
This isn't about terrorism.
Let's talk about terrorism.
This is about
the fact
that these
four women, you know who the greatest terrorists are in this country?
Particularly these two, have taken over the Democratic Party, hijacked it from their own speaker.
It's so interesting that you use the term for the only two Muslim women in Congress. The term you chose to use,
nothing to do
sir,
with whether they're Muslim
hijacking.
Or not, Angela.
Oh, really?
Nothing
you
to
chose
do with that.
To use
Absolutely
the
not.
Term hijacking. You can
and
talk
that's one
over
of the
me all you want to, but the bottom
Donald
line
Trump
is the greatest
the lottery.
Terrorist
He's a lucky
group
guy.
In this country are white men. White men who think like you. That is
yes.
the greatest terrorist
You're right.
threat
You're
in this
absolutely
country.
Right. It's all because of guys like me.
No. Do you think this works, Harmeet? I mean, it's painful to even listen to these people, but do you think this works?
You know, what's funny is I had a friend of mine who's on the liberal side remind his friends that they're supposed to be against racial profiling. You know, but all of a sudden, racial profiling is fine when it comes to demonizing supporters of the president or even just white people who aren't supporters of the president. So they're desperate, Laura, and they're seizing on this demagoguery to try to desperately regain the high ground after Russia didn't work. It's racism. If racism doesn't work, it's the recession. You know, it's whatever tool is at hand to raise this guerrilla verbal warfare.
Yeah, it doesn't follow. And yet you have Democrats who believe that even though they failed with the Russian narrative, and even though we, our country has made so much racial progress over the last 50 years, that somehow the race thing is going to work, and if that doesn't work, they're going to cheer on recession. It just seems like they're the most pessimistic people on the face of the planet. I'm not sure that pessimism is going to sell. I mean, people are point to all sorts of polls. I get it, but I don't know. I'm not seeing it. I'm really not seeing this as a winning strategy.
Well, what's worse about it, Laura, is that it isn't even true. I don't think they're pessimistic so much as deeply cynical and prepared to divide this country, even though there is no such division, in order to win at the polls. And this is a corrosive strategy because there are some people who will believe this. I mean, there are generations of young college students who grow up to be the software programmers who make the products that manipulate what we see, who are taught in colleges that, you know, this is a deeply racist country, this is an oppressive place, mm-hmm. we need to be sheltered, and we need the whole worldview change here. Beto O'Rourke was saying that yesterday in one of his campaign appearances. And so, and this line is parroted by the New York Times with its revisionist history about, you know, the founding of our country. So it goes from top to bottom. I don't think they believe it. I think they view it as a tool to take back control.
Harmeet Dhillon here on the Laura Ingraham podcast. Harmeet, thank you so much. We'll catch up with you soon. Let's go to Thomas in New York. Thomas, welcome.
Hey, Laura. Love your show. Love the podcast.
Thanks.
They're a party of division right from the get-go, from the day that Trump was inaugurated. They started with the conspiracy probe. Pulled a two-year Mueller investigation that proved nothing. It's just continuous impeachment talk when they have nothing to impeach the president on. That didn't work, so they changed course and went with racism charges. They've been trying to pit that us against them hatred in this country since the president was elected. And now they're hoping for a recession. And for the life of me, I don't know any elected official who would wish that their country goes into a recession. That to me is just mind-boggling.
Yeah, I think, again, that is a – well, I think it's a devastating critique on the Democrat Party's current state of mind. I don't think that they – necessarily believe that, like all the things that, you know, that you just said. I don't think they believe that we live in the worst country in the face of the earth. I don't believe most of Democrats think that. But the activists sure do. They definitely do. So given that, where does this all go? And I think that's disturbing. But it's, again, it's a party built on right now hatred.
This economy is going pretty well. I feel like the bottom has to fall out at some point. And by the way, I'm hoping for it because I think one way you get rid of Trump is a crashing economy. So please bring on the recession.
Yeah. I've been hoping for a recession. People hate me for it, but it would get rid of Trump. So you shouldn't hate me for it.
I mean, recessions are really bad. People lose their jobs and their homes,
I know.
And we shouldn't wish.
It's worth it. Well, you should wish for a recession because that will definitely get him unelected.
Okay, but Bill, you don't really want a recession.
I really do.
You're going to knock.
We have survived many recessions. We can't survive another Donald Trump term.
Let's go to Dennis in Arizona. Dennis.
Hi. Good morning, Laura. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
You know, I have to think back that when Trump was running for president, he promised to drain the swamp and make change. And people, more than anything, are afraid of change, and he brings major change. He's also outside of the scope of a politician, and I think that scares the left. I think they have power, want to keep that power, and he's going to drain the swamp and thereby take away that power. And they're fighting tooth and nail to save them.
Well, I think it's more than that. I think they... It's not just changing things because they want to change things. They want to make turn the country into a socialist country. That's their goal. He's the impediment to their radical change. Trump actually wants to get back to just common sense politics. He wants to get back to a government that actually serves the people. So in that sense, he's a traditionalist. And it's kind of odd to say Donald Trump's a traditionalist, but I think he's far more traditional than he gets credit for in the types of policies that he's pushing. But of course, I agree with you. I mean, the swamp in D.C., well, they never wanted him. They You know, the swamp deep state wanted him out so badly, they trumped up this phony Russia thing to try to, you know, knock him off, put him in jail or impeach him or just have him leave in disgrace. And they were willing to, in my mind, subvert the rule of law to do that. By any means necessary, they were willing to ensure that he didn't win. And then once he did win, to try to get him out of office. Well, that flopped. They were found out. And now the Democrats are on to the next feeble attempt, which is either to say that all Trump voters are racist or, you know, Trump himself, of course, is a racist. The country's a bad country. At least the Trump supporters are bad people. They're deplorables. I mean, they're doing a new version of the deplorables thing. And that didn't work. Didn't work when Hillary did it. I don't think it works when if Biden does it or Kamala Harris does it. I just think it's a losing strategy. People don't want to hear you say that, you know, we live in a rotten country. Most people just don't. You know, most people don't believe that. They believe we live in a good country with overwhelmingly good people.
Do you think that it's a racist act to cast a vote for President Trump in 2020?
Well, at best, it means looking the other way on racism. But I think a lot of people are wondering what kind of deal even that is supposed to be. Basically, what he's saying is, all right, I want you to look the other way on the racism, tolerate the negativity, accept the instability of my administration, because I am going to deliver for you job growth almost as good as the Obama years.
Well, again, you think it's a good idea to have the people of our country feel like their leaders think they're bad people. Instead of, well, they actually wanted Trump. That's how badly the establishment had screwed up our policy. They decided to get rid of all of them and to go with this guy who had no political experience. See, that's a moment for soul searching, but the Democrats take it as the opposite cue. It's a cue to go even further left. I want to thank all of our great sponsors here on the Laura Ingraham Podcast for making this podcast possible for you free every day that we load it. And remember, it's ADT Home Security, Genucel Home Title Lock, and Pluto TV. Remember, America now and forever on the Laura Ingraham Podcast. We'll see you next time.